Okay. We are in our fifth class in our ethics class, and it's titled whatever it's love for you, for me, whatever it is. We are going to be focusing primarily on two very famous texts in our Mishnah and Talmud. And we're going to discuss it, and we're going to skip everything else. We're just going to ignore one of the middle texts, because it just gets us bogged down, and I'd rather focus on two particular texts that we'll see, the first and the third text. We'll start off with our question, right? We always start off with a question, and that is... What? Don't worry. I'll fill you in as we go along. All right. Okay. Here's our question. I haven't even looked at this. Our question is, does Judaism condone... Jewish ethics condone a socialistic society, right? We have kibbutzim, right? Does Judaism, according to Jewish ethics and classical ethics, is this something that is condoned? Is this something that's appropriate or even petitioned for? Is this an ideal? Remember that the kibbutz society did not come up, wasn't from, you know, this is obviously a modern thing, modern within the last 150 years.
There were a whole bunch of Jewish people that belonged to socialist camps.
100%. Jews actually are very attracted to the socialist movement. The question is it a Jewish thing? Does Judaism believe and prescribe a socialistic society?
I think it was more a matter of financial and social levels that they were at that time.
Meaning it was a necessity.
Yeah.
It was at a necessity.
They
okay.
A camp in the country.
That's a possibility.
Camp.
The question is...
If you go back to Abraham...
Abraham didn't have a society so much.
Yeah,
he had his own little
place. The clan, which was kind of...
There were tribal... Jews were tribes for many years, right? So, again, according to Jewish tradition, according to the Torah and the sources, our Talmud, our Mishnah, etc., does Judaism believe... in a socialistic society?
Part of it, definitely.
I think so.
Because you have to be good to everybody.
Because you're all supposed to
you have to be good to everybody. That doesn't necessarily mean a socialistic society.
You're also not supposed to put yourself above
Put anybody above any other people.
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like yes.
Sounds like socialism.
Sounds like socialism to me, right? No matter, you have to remember, there are kibbutzim today till this very day. There are plenty of kibbutzim. I was on a kibbutz, and they make, I think every kibbutz makes exceptions because you want doctors to live in your community, otherwise you don't have a doctor, right? So you pay them a little bit more, you allow them to get an outside source of income, maybe not you don't pay them, but you give them, you get a chance to get a little extra outside sources of income. As attractive, I'm not familiar with any kibbutz today that is completely kibbutzy, as they say, completely socialistic,
yeah,
although
yeah,
most of them...
Was also the 40s period. Early
it was even before that. Yeah. It was even before that. And that also probably could have been a necessity. The question is that when we are trying to distinguish, we're studying ethics. And now it's important, and we've recognized this before. It's important. The first thing we do is we ask the question because I want to know what I think.
Yeah.
Then we want to ask the question, what does history say? And then we ask the question, well, what do the sources say? Right? So we're going to study the sources to find out whether or not our instincts are correct. Does Judaism believe in a socialistic society? And that's what we're going to be studying today, among many other things. That's why has the title it for you or for me, or what's the
for both of us.
But for all of us, etc. Love is everybody, right? We're going to try to figure this out through our classical sources. Yes.
Was there ever a kibbutz with the very religious, like the Haverim? Did they ever have a kibbutz?
Not that I'm familiar with, because most of the kibbutz would be a focus on. You have to remember that the Haredim were very minimum in the development of the country.
But they never came as a group.
They were
in a kibbutz
as a kibbutz type. Not
they don't
that I
want to work the land; they want to study.
Not necessarily.
No,
again,
survive.
And again, as we talked about last week, the ideal is an agricultural society, and at least that was what was prescribed originally 2 weeks ago, right? If we still remember. So there are dati kibbutzim. There are religious kibbutzim that are in the classical Orthodox tradition. They're still around today. I spent a weekend in Kibbutz Lavi, which is beautiful. A lot of cows, but very beautiful. And the kids love the cows. And that's they serve They have a lot of industry that they put out, but it's a kibbutz. It's a classic kibbutz with, again, the few exceptions of the doctor who goes out and gets a little extra, does a little extra stuff on the side. But anything that's done on grounds is, and almost everybody works on grounds, is shared. And so, as far as Charedim, though, I don't know if that ever became their thing. As far as I know, it's not.
Okay.
I believe there were some Charedim that might have. Again, Charedim is a difficult because you have some who might jump both fences in
but
the regards.
But even on a kibbutz, there have to be leaders.
Of course,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
But it's like Orthodox.
No, we're talking about leaders. We're talking about leaders as people who are running the show.
Yeah.
You have the president
somebody
of the kibbutz,
has to make
right?
The decision. Yeah.
Right. People have to make decisions, but nonetheless, right. And I think in every socialistic society, you can't have things, you know, running rampant.
Right.
You have some people who will take turns taking being the leader, etc.
Right, yeah,
right.
Like the
so, like, there's the
make.
President of the co-op or the whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we have in our history, in the more recent history, we have Jews that have leniencies towards socialistic tendencies, right?
Mm-hmm.
All those communists, etc. They were all Jews, right?
Yeah.
In the McCarthyism, not all of them, but a good chunk of them.
Yeah.
The most famous was just reading an article about, besides Marx, but even in the United States of America, there was the blacklist of Hollywood in the 40s and 50s. They were all, tons of them were Jewish.
Yeah.
And so the question is this based on our classic ethical texts, our texts of ethics? So while we have that question and we're mulling it, we're still mulling. I feel the mull, right? Why don't we start studying a couple of very famous sources? The first one comes from text number 1, which can be found on page
44.
Here we're going to do our little box, right? And we have, and you guys have your own little chart in your thing. It's four levels. And we'll start reading. We have a reader.
There are four types of people. One who said, mine is mine and yours is yours. This is the average type. But some say this is the Sodom type. One who says, mine is yours and yours is mine, is a simpleton. Mine is yours and yours is yours is righteous, pious. Yours is mine and mine is wicked.
Okay, this sounds like one of these nursery rhymes. But in fact, it isn't, right? We need to break these things down. This is not the four questions,
four
not
sons,
the four
not
sons. These are four types of people, okay? I want to go to the first one last, okay? Because that's where we have a debate, right? So I want to go to the first one. We're going to do that last, and we'll save a little box for that. Let's do the next one. One who says, mine is yours, and yours is mine, is a simpleton. Mine is yours, and
so
yours is mine, right?
Everything belongs to all of us.
Right? Mine is yours, and yours is mine. Everything belongs to all of us.
Mine is yours, and yours is mine.
What is this
everybody
called?
Everybody owns everything.
That's called equality in marriage.
It's not called equality in marriage because there's no such thing as equality in marriage. The women are on a higher level.
That's socialism.
That's socialism. All right.
It's a simpleton, they say here.
It's a simple. Yeah, now why is it called simpleton here?
It's called a simpleton, right?
Right.
The term is ama aretz. Ama aretz means it's translated in many different ways. But someone who doesn't know anything, right? Someone who doesn't know anything. Why is that? Well, let's break down our chart and then we'll go back, okay? The next.
Mine is yours and yours is yours.
I'm putting it right in.
Mine is yours and yours is yours. Mine, we can find some way to do this, is yours. Yours is yours.
There's not much left.
Right?
For me.
That is. They call it righteous. That's pious.
It's
called a chassid. Chassid, as we mentioned before, the classical definition of chassid means pious. Chassidim have taken on a new world, right? A new word. The word has taken on new meaning, but the classic word chassid means pious. Chassidim rishonim. You'll see the original chassidim. Those are the very pious people. Okay. So this is considered pious.
So
right?
I don't own anything, and you have to take care of me.
What's that?
I don't own anything, so you have to support
me. We haven't gotten there,
no,
right?
No.
Okay. You haven't gotten there. Mine is yours, and yours is yours. In other words,
I don't
know
anything.
I give you everything.
and therefore
I should be taken care of.
Hold that thought.
Uh-huh. Hold that thought. And finally, but it is considered pious. This is what we're looking for. Okay? So, and yours is mine, and mine is mine. Okay? So yours is mine. Mine.
Nothing left for you.
It's called selfish.
That's called...
Well, they're saying wicked.
We're saying that's called wicked. Selfish.
Well, we've equated wicked and selfish put together before, right? That's my equation. Okay, the first one we have, we can put this down. We have the debate: what it is, mine is mine,
yours is yours. That's capitalism.
Well,
average.
It's either A, an average, or B. A characteristic of the people
socialism.
Of Sodom, not socialism. Mm-hmm. What does it say in the text? Mind you, the average type, but some say this is the Sodom type. We're talking about, we all remember Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Yeah, they weren't so good, and their ending wasn't so good either, although they had a lot of salty food. So the question becomes, now, let's break this down. Okay, we'll start over here with the wicked. But yours is mine, was mine is mine. Does it make sense?
No.
Why?
Because there's nothing left for the other guy.
Well, does the statement make sense? Yeah. Everything is mine.
Yeah.
You own nothing.
I own everything.
I own everything. Right? Does it make sense? Does the statement of the Mishnah make sense that this is that the person who says this is wicked? Right? Yes?
Yeah.
We agree.
Self-centered.
Self-centered. But more than self-centered, one of these is selfish. Right? There are people who are selfish. This is evil. This is wicked as evil. Even people who are saying, you don't have anything, and they just grab things. Right?
Dictatorial.
Right. It's where I run the show. I can do whatever I want, and this is what I do. Right?
Dictatorship.
The King Achav, who we might have skipped over, one of the worst things that he did was, is he had a wife named Izebel, also known as Jezebel in English, the lousy translation though, right? Her name was Izebel, and she decided she wanted a field, so she arranged for the owner of the field to get killed, and then she took the field. That's it, right? That is evil. God got really ticked off at that, right? There's more of the story, but that is completely evil, and we all make sense. Let's go back to here. Mine is yours, and what yours is yours. Okay? In other words, you saying, I'm going to rely on everything, right? I don't necessarily say that. I say that I'm an opposite extreme. If you ever need anything, come take it.
You but translate mine is yours, and yours is yours.
I didn't translate it. They translate it as pious.
They're like nuns and priests.
Right.
The community has to support them.
Well, why do you say that? Nuns and priests don't work.
Well, they do work. But they don't...
What is he defining here?
They don't own anything. They have to have something to give away. They're saying something is mine, right? It started out mine, but I'm giving it away. It's yours now.
Whatever is mine is yours. Mm-hmm. Whatever is yours is mine, as we say, socialist... What's mine is mine... let's go back. What's mine is yours, and what's yours is yours. You're basically stating a fact that something is mine.
That's the average.
I work. No, this is the pious. Mm-hmm. Back here. I work for a living, right? I work for a living.
And whatever I
earn, it's mine.
Because
I worked hard, and I got it. God blessed me with a paycheck. We've discussed that a couple of weeks ago, right? And then I say, "What's mine is yours. What's yours is yours." Right? Which means what? Not that I'm accepting charity. Just the opposite. I'm not accepting charity.
That anything I have, you can have.
This is a very...
Anything I have...
There are societies like this. There are societies in Middle Eastern societies, it's, you know, people say, there's an old custom that says if you like something, then you give it to them, right? Now, you don't have to do that because it's still mine, right? And in that culture, it's actually a requirement according to their law, right? But here it's saying... I'm not asking for anything, just the opposite of what Aline said. I'm not asking for anything, right? But if you need anything, mi casa su casa, right? What's mine is yours.
So you're not giving everything away automatically. You're just saying
if you need something,
that someone can help you if it's needed.
If there's ever any need, if you ever need something, it's yours. In other words,
it's totally different.
It's totally different. And remember that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. How does someone have this perspective? How does someone have this perspective? How can I possibly say what's mine is yours?
I have to own something first.
Okay, so I own it.
Yeah.
Right? God granted me something.
And you also have faith that you will be that provided for if you...
No.
Right?
God gave you something, so it is not yours, it's God's.
We don't really it own it.
See, there's a certain loan.
We don't really own it.
Right. I explain to people in regards to charity, right? People don't understand this. They think that they're doing me a favor. I'm like, no, I'm doing you a favor. It's hard to sell that, right? But I explained to them in regards to charity that it's that when we are talking about tzedakah is supposed to be put in this perspective that basically God gave me a check, right? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Seeing that the check is signed G-O-D, right? I put it in the bank account, and it's and it goes through. He's got embers.
They don't read them. They would.
Right. It goes into the bank account, right? And at the all, my perspective is supposed to be that 90% is mine, and 10% I'm supposed to give back. It doesn't belong to me, right? And I sort of have the ability to and the rights to keep the 90% if I tithe and give my 10% back. That's how I'm supposed to see it, right? What's mine is yours means. This was given to me, therefore, I appreciate it, thank you, right? But at the same time, if anybody needs it, then it's not necessarily mine for keeps.
So
it's been granted, so therefore anybody who needs it should be come and take.
So you're doing God's work when you give 10% of your income.
I'm just finishing the job.
Yes, yeah.
But that's 10%.
I thought it was 15. But it doesn't say everything.
No, that's tipping for the waiter. Yeah.
Yeah, because mine is yours.
Okay.
It doesn't say
so Johanna has a very good point. It doesn't say anything over 10%. There is actually, we have a problem with this. And the problem with this is that according to Jewish law, this gets focused on the second source, which we're not going to do. But according to Jewish law, or Jewish tradition, one is required to tithe. Someone who gives over gives 20% is considered pious and wonderful.
That's good.
And anyone, if you give over than that, then you're considered foolish.
Oh.
Now there's a discussion of whether or not what's that based on, and there are many opinions who say fundraisers have said that's only based if you are going to become a pauper from giving over 20% of your income. If that is not the case, that wouldn't apply. And they've been campaigning for that for a long time. But nonetheless, it's considered someone is not allowed to give all of their property away.
Right.
Right? You're not allowed to do that. In fact, it's considered wrong. To the extreme, we say, Tzadik makpid al mamono yoter migufo. Say that again. A righteous person is stricter on his money more than his own body. Tzadik makpid al mamono, a righteous person, a tzadik, is strict on his money more than his own body. Now, why is that? The example they give is when Jacob went back, remember the story of Jacob wrestling with the angel?
Yeah.
It's a classic, it's in there, right? So why was he stuck alone? It says that he was left alone. Why was he left alone? So the Midrash tells us that he went back to the camp. Because it says he went back to the camp and he was left alone. Why was he left alone? The Midrash says, because he went back for what we call pachim ketanim, small pots. He had left some small pots at home, and it left him, put him in a situation of danger where he was alone, and ultimately he was attacked by this wrestling with whatever it is, that's a whole theological discussion of what it was. Now, I remember when I moved from New Rochelle to Stanford, we couldn't fit the Tupperware in the car. So we went back to get the Tupperware. It was only 30 minutes, whatever it was. And my wife said that we're going back for the pachim ketanim, the small pots and whatever. So I went into this whole diatribe and I explained, no! Tzadik makbid al mamono yoter migufo. Why did Jacob go back for these small pots?
Didn't help
because, got other issues besides that.
Yeah.
But it says, the question was, why was he alone? Everybody else had gone over there. Why did he come back? He said, because he left his pots there and a righteous person is strict on his money more than his own body. Meaning he knew he was putting himself in danger. Obviously, there's danger and there's danger. I don't know if he would have known the extreme. I knew there was some physical concern, but nonetheless, He still went back for it because a righteous person says, well, the money that I have is not necessarily mine. God gave it to me. And if God gave it to me, then he wanted me to have it. You know the old jokes about the Jews and the pennies, right? The Jews picking up the pennies, right? They're all stereotypical jokes.
But does that mean if you're poor that God didn't want you to have it?
If you were poor, this is what God... No, it means that every dime that you're given was allotted by God. And God wanted me to have this. Period. So therefore, the whole joke, if you drop a penny, you have, you know, you're supposed to pick it up, right? Why are you supposed to pick it up? Because that penny was given to me by God. God wanted me to do that. If you are being frivolous, or you're losing money, or you're not keeping track of your money, then what are you saying? You're not keeping in mind that the paycheck was signed by God, right? So if I keep that in mind, then I say, okay, I have two responsibilities. I have a responsibility, it was mine, is yours, right? And then I have to keep that hold and keep that in perspective and say, wait a second, even though it was mine, is yours, I still have to figure out, I can't put myself in a situation where I'm not going to have any more money. God wanted me to be able to survive, right? So we're going to be discussing this in the next source. This is why it was the last one. But we're going to be discussing this in the next source to try to figure out how far do we get for you or for me, right? What is mine is yours, what's yours is yours. How far of extreme do we go? Before we do that, we have to back up. Socialism, what's mine is yours and what's yours is mine. So it's considered a simpleton. Why? It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And you're losing control of God.
And you have control.
If God, it's not necessarily control. It's a perspective that it's given to you by God, right? So there are people have lots, right? You also have to remember that if I say what's mine is yours and what's yours is mine, right? Then there is no this.
And there's no God.
There's no God involved, and that's what socialism wanted. There is no charity involved. There's a debate, Rabbi Akiva, we're going to see this source later on. Rabbi Akiva has a debate with this emperor and says, why does God make poor people? And he explains very simple. God makes poor people so I can give charity. And we get into the whole concept of what is the basis of charity and what is charity supposed to be. If someone, let's say, wrote the checks for me, I wasn't aware of it. We'll get into that discussion, whether or not is there a purpose in the act, or is it just about the ends, about getting to the goal, right? That's a very long discussion, meaning at the end of the day, I got to feed these people, right? Or at the end of the day, I have to feed these people. And Rabbi Akiva argues that it's about me. It's about me giving to those people. That's what's more important because of the way charity affects individuals. Nonetheless, with socialism, you don't have that.
Right.
You don't have that accent. And it doesn't. It says you're a simpleton. You have no. That's not how society can work. People have to have their own stuff. They have to put God into the equation. And they have to believe in charity and giving and ultimately the concept of giving. Yes, Your Honor.
Now, you're saying that mine is yours and yours is mine is socialism?
No.
Yes.
Mine is yours and yours is mine.
That's not socialism.
Why not? We share everything.
No, I don't see socialism like that. Like mine is yours and yours is mine. You still have your own things if you're a socialist.
In the kibbutz society that I was in, there are bicycles, right? They are called community bicycles. You're not allowed to own a bicycle. And if you, the kids wanted to, basically, you just got up, you went on the bicycle, and you took it. There was nothing that was belonged personally to anybody. Everybody shared everything.
But in socialist societies, you have your own home.
You have your own home, but they're all the same.
They're not all the same.
Relatively speaking.
In every socialist country, there is...
Well, that's the abuse.
A little class difference.
That's the abuse. Mm-hmm. In the classic, we're talking about in the textbook. In the textbook, that's what it's supposed to be.
Pure socialism.
Pure socialism. What's mine is yours, it's yours is mine. We share everything. No one owns anything.
Right. But in society, it doesn't
matter. It's true.
They didn't even own it. They were in a communal house and people took care of them, took turns taking care of them.
Right. And the text says that this doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not what the intended plan was. The intention was for people to be supported. Now, if you go through the text, I gave a class 2 years ago called The Story of Ruth, and teaching us basic social responsibility or society or social law. I'm forgetting the title of the class. It's in my notes and it's in my files. In that class, I explained how so much of Judaism's laws are based on taking care of making sure everyone is taken care of, and with a certain dignity. We were an agricultural society. How did the poor people get charity?
The gleanings.
They went in. And they followed. If you look at the book of Ruth, you'll see that they were following everybody around. They followed the workers around just like everybody else. Whatever they dropped, they picked up. But no one could tell the difference. They were part of society. The Levirate marriage, which Ruth was in, looking for a Levirate marriage. What's the purpose of a Levirate marriage? Because if you're not familiar with the Levirate marriage, it's when in Hebrew it's called Yibum.
The brother.
When a man dies without having children, and so the brother of this man has to marry his sister-in-law, and they have a child and name that child after his dead brother. And what's the purpose of that?
Yeah. So that the family can't
keep the family.
It's not just keeping the family going, which is how we would think.
And the name going.
And not even that, because okay. The name. What my perspective was is that if you have this woman, remember how that everything was centered around the nuclear family. If you have this woman, right, and she was when a woman gets married, she went to her husband's family. Wait a second. Now she has nothing connecting her to her husband's family. What's going to connect her to her husband's family?
A child
of that family, the grandson. And now they're required to take care of her. So we have it built into this system. It's a beautiful system. If you break it down, built into the system is to make sure that everyone is taken care of. But at the end of the day, it's still, I have my stuff and I'm here to share with you. You have your stuff, right? Finally, we have the last section. What's mine is yours, and what's yours is yours. And that is considered, right? What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. In the final, right? So here we say, well, that's the average, right? People, that's, you would think, listen, I have my house, you have your house, everything's great, right? It's not a great system, but at the end of the day, you know, we build good neighbors, good fences, build good neighbors, something like that, right? You have your stuff, I have my stuff, and
that leaves you totally uninvolved.
It leaves you uninvolved, correct. But there are opinions that say, okay, so it means you're not a good person. Doesn't make you a bad person, right? Doesn't make you a bad person. That's an average person. But the other opinion disagrees and says, no, this is what we call Midat Sodom. This is what the people of Sodom did. Now, does anybody remember why Sodom was destroyed?
Because they didn't open their house for strangers?
They didn't open their house to strangers, right? There were laws against paupers. The Midrash, basically the story of Sodom is not mentioned necessarily in the text. Mm-hmm. And the Midrash is, the story is, as far as them being destroyed, but their crimes were not. So God says, I just can't handle them anymore. So the Midrash goes in and fills in a lot of the blanks. And remember that the Midrash is not there to be taken literally, but to give us a perspective of what's going on. So they tell a number of stories. They tell a story about a pauper. There was a pauper that used to hang out in society, right? And they saw that he wasn't going away. So they eventually investigated and found a woman that was feeding him. And so what did they do? I tried to find the text in an appropriate format, and I wasn't able to. And I apologize. God willing, I'll bring it in next week. They took this old woman and they tied her up and they poured honey on her and they left and they let the bees sting her to death. Now this is an example of a story that was taking place in Sodom. Not necessarily what happened, but that Midrash wants to tell us a story. The other story they told is that they had beds. They would sell beds one size fits all. If you didn't fit, they would stretch your legs. If you were if you're short, if you were too long, they would
chop them off.
Something like that. And they said that was two examples of what Sodom did. Now let's analyze these stories. And remember, we have the story of the pauper that the old lady fed that she was
tzedakah.
Right. So they were anti tzedakah. Why would you be anti tzedakah?
Because
what's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours.
And you're saying right. What's mine is yours.
Now, why did they investigate? How did they figure this out, that this woman was feeding this guy?
Because he wasn't leaving.
Because they wanted
he
to
wasn't
get
leaving,
out.
Or he wasn't dead.
Yeah.
In other words, if he keeps coming back, that means someone is feeding him. Right? So they figured this out and said, this is not how we do things in our house, in our community. No one is allowed to, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. You cannot share. They were extremely wealthy, by the way. The people, remember that Lot went to Sodom because he saw that there was extremely fertile land. They were extremely prosperous. And so what happens is that they tie her up and they pour honey on her and they let the beast sting her. Who's liable for the murder?
Person that poured the honey on.
Why?
Why? Because
the honey didn't kill her.
No, but they did it on purpose. They did it on purpose. They knew.
So what? The honey didn't kill her.
No, they would never kill her.
They would never kill her. Because what's mine is mine. What's yours is yours. Right? I can't kill you, and the bees kill me. So they set up a system. They said, we're not responsible. Yours is yours. Mine is mine. You have a bed, right? Everybody is the same. And you don't fit in here, we're going to change you, right? But yeah, because everybody has to fit here. Everything is separate. Everything is, in other words, everything is the same, but everything is separate. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. We don't share here. I have my stuff, you have your stuff. And what that creates is a society of evil, says the second opinion. It's not, well, you know, okay, you have your stuff, so you're not righteous, you're not bad, you're in the middle. Midat benonit. Right? It's in the middle. Remember we talked about the middle ground. It's not the way it is. Because a society needs people to share. If you are totally into, this is my problem, it's not your problem, then you have created a society that says that I don't care about anybody else. And society, if you get rid of that, then you can continue to rationalize and say, well, I didn't kill her, the bees killed her.
Well, they took the humanity out of life.
Exactly it. And that it started with what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, right? As soon as it got to such an extreme, again, very wealthy people. We have rules here. We don't share. Everybody, and it sounds, it makes sense. We don't want people to, I don't want you to borrow anything. I don't want anything. We don't have any conflicts, right? Those are the rules. No. The rules like that will lead to,
But
they do it with their hands off, and to them they were doing everything within the law, right? I'm not stealing from you. I didn't kill her. It's an abuse and a perversion of right and wrong. When you have that extreme, it leads to a perversion of right and wrong. It's an amazing midrash about that being honey. I'm sorry we weren't able to read it inside. Because that midrash, you see the way it's broken down and how one thing can lead to the next. When you don't have societal rules of how people taking care of each other and rules of social justice, then it leads to an incredible breakdown. Okay? Any questions we have so far? Okay. We're still left with this question. All right, Johanna, what was your question? The question in regards to charity is how extreme do we get?
What's mine is yours,
and what's yours is... Well, that was the original question. The answer was no.
No.
Right. Back to Johanna's question is, well, how far do we go? What's mine is yours, and what's yours is yours. Well, that means everything I have, I give to you. It's mine. God gave it to me, and I'll give it to you, but to what extreme, how far does that extreme go? Do I have to give you everything? And what about me feeding myself?
Right.
Right? What about me taking care of my family? What about me driving my car? Right? So at the end of the day, we have to figure out how far does this extreme go. That's why we're going to learn the third source of this, text number 3. Okay, and this is, again, one of the more famous sources. Should be familiar with our famous, the triage case. Our case of one jug of water, 2 people in the desert. If you haven't been familiar with it yet, you will, because we're going to spend we're going to bring this source up over and over and over again. This is one of the famous sources. It's in the Talmud in Tractate Bava Metzia, page 62a. And I just quoted this in a class that I gave, because this is one of the sources that comes up all the time. Sources says as follows. 2 people Two people were traveling. One of them had a flask of water in his hand. Both of them drink, they would die. If one of them drinks, he would reach the settlement. Okay, you understand the case? It's the antidote case. One person has the antidote. They're in the desert. They're going to die of thirst. Right? If one person drinks, he will be able to survive. If both of them drink, they'll both die. What does he do?
Why if both of them share it?
It's not enough. Now, you could say, what if? This is a textbook case. This is a hypothetical, right? Somebody started saying, well, they can maybe make it, you never know. No. We're looking at the textbook. We want to know what to do in this type of situation. Unfortunately, during the Shoah, during the Holocaust, this issue came up many times. I give a class on Holocaust and Halakha. Mm-hmm. I give on an annual every year on the halachic questions that were asked during the Shoah, during the Holocaust. And this came up very often in regards to one person will survive, the others will not. So here we have that. What do we do? Comes along Ben Petura, and he expounded, he said, it is better in such a case that both of them drink and die, rather than one of them see the death of his fellow. Can't do it. Right? Again, it's better that both of them drink and die, rather than one of them see the death of his fellow. This was the accepted view. Until Rabbi Akiva came and taught, based on the verse in the Torah in Leviticus, the life of your brother is with you. This means your life takes precedence over the life of your fellow. Okay? So let's break down the case.
So wait a minute. What if the other fellow, gee, the life of your brother is with you?
Let's break down the case.
They both die.
You're not wrong necessarily. Let's break down the case. Okay? Two people. Here's my excellent drawing. Right?
One flask
of water. I don't know what a flask is, so we'll just call it a pitcher. Right? Okay, two people, one pitcher. We have Ben Petura, who says, both drink. And we have Rabbi Akiva, who says,
I drink.
Rabbi Akiva wasn't there, but says, Who's supposed to drink?
The person who has the flask.
He who has the water makes the rules. Right? It's really I. I take precedence. So I drink. Not necessarily Rabbi Akiva, but I drink. Yeah. Let's back up a second. Okay? Where is the water?
In between.
No.
No, one of them has it.
One of them has a flask of water in their hand, okay? So the pitcher of water is over here, okay? So now I'm walking in the desert, and we're dying of thirst. It's a terrible situation, right? This is not, obviously, if I'm hanging out with somebody in the desert, it's not somebody I don't like, right? This is my friend, and I'm very sad, but what do I do, right? If I drink, I'm subsequently killing this person. They're not going to survive. I know it. There's nothing I can do about it. Right? If I give him to drink, I won't survive. Right? And if if we both drink, we won't survive. Okay? Someday I'll tell you the case of baby A and baby B, the Siamese twins, where that they shared a heart. It was in 1973. And how this came into play. But in the will someday, I'm gonna someday we'll get a chance.
That's a much easier case than.
Not at all. And we'll explain. And you have to come to that class to explain it. Okay. Here we have Ben Petura, right? So Ben Petura is our first opinion, and he expounds and says, "It is better in such a case that both of them drink and die, rather than one of them see death of his fellow." Do we understand why he says this?
No, because they're still not going to die the same time. They're not automatically.
Textbook, yes, they'll die the same time.
Yeah, but, you know.
We split it evenly, because, right, this is what you do, there's water. So it's my job, according to Ben Petura, right, to take this picture and share it with you in order that I have done everything I can to both save my life and your life. It won't happen, but I know it won't.
But
that's everything up to the point that I can.
Isn't it up to
the textbook case.
You will have ill feelings all your life that your friend died.
Right.
You took all that water.
Okay, so why don't I just give him the whole water?
Then you die.
Right. He's going to have guilt feelings.
So he'll have guilt feelings. Yeah. Right. So to prevent the guilt feelings, we might as well not drink either. We'll just leave it in the middle and hopefully somebody else will show up who's dying of thirst and he can actually use it appropriately because we'll be dead.
Unless it evaporated.
Unless it evaporated. It's hot. Maybe Have you ever gone traveling in the desert, by the way, the water gets hot like tea. It's terrible. All right. So Beit Baturah says, he expounded and said, it's better than that in such a case that both of them drink and die rather than one of them see the death of his fellow. What is the major premise besides the, what is the major difference besides the conclusion between Beit Baturah and Rabbi Akiva?
Now you don't have to feel guilty because Rabbi Akiva said death is what you are supposed to.
No, that's the conclusion.
No.
What is the major difference between Rabbi Akiva and Beit Baturah on how they come to their
conclusion? Well, I don't understand. Mine is mine and yours is yours.
And how they come to their conclusion.
He's basing it on the life of your brother is with you. That means that you're responsible for him, mm-hmm. So why would you drink and not let him? I don't
know. Well,
what do we see in the middle of this thing? There's a parenthesis here.
Right, so
what does the parenthesis say?
In such a case.
No.
No, Vayikra of 25,
30. Vayikra of 25, 36.
Which I don't have in my back pocket, so what does it say?
It tells us, that's exactly what he said, the life of your brother is with you. Okay. And that is in regards to lending money, by the way. And during that one is required to lend money to people when they're so the life of your brother is with you. You have to require him to lend money. That's the context that it's used. But what
that
is
that could go either way?
Okay, he expounds that verse to say, your life, the life of your brother is with you, right? You have to be there. So you're, in other words, the life of your brother is with you. If he's around, you're around. Right?
You both could say that. Goes either way.
Except
who
has the water.
Who has the water,
right? So Rabbi Akiva says, I have a verse that I expound. Beit Baturah does not. There you go, share your water. Right? She's not sharing. Beit Baturah doesn't have the verse. Beit Baturah says, he says, it must be in such a case, it is better. I don't know what to do, Beit Baturah says. It is better in such a case, because I don't have a conclusion, and the Torah does not tell me what to do per se, or I don't know what to do, so I cannot tell you to kill somebody, because which Beit Baturah says, that you might be killing somebody, you might be responsible for their death. Rabbi Akiva says, no, I have a verse. Right? Until Rabbi Akiva showed up, and he says, no, the verse tells me that that if I have the water, if it's mine, then I take precedent. You should be with me, have to be with me. If I'm going to give you a gift, I'm going to lend you something, that has to be with you. That means I have to still be standing at the end of the day. So, I can't give you everything. I still have to give you enough of that I'm still going to be able to survive. What then Rabbi Akiva is basing his teaching on a verse. That Beit Baturah is saying, I'm not really sure what to do. Before we get into this discussion, I want to ask the question of what happens if it's in here. What happens if here's the pitcher?
Throw the dice?
No, whichever one gets the first takes.
Arm wrestle.
With my luck, they fight over and it would all go on the ground.
And they're all spilled. Right. So what they do is they do it peacefully and they put it on the side, right? There is a concept of kol da'alim gvar, that the stronger one wins, if in this situation, if they're willing to do that for their own, that they have a right to try to save their life. Right? The right to try to save their life. This doesn't belong to anybody. Right? It's ownerless. If it's ownerless, no one has the right over it until they can claim it. Right? So ultimately, Beit Baturah would probably be correct. Either one of them gives up, right? Or they say, we can't, and we have a draw, and we're both going to have to die. That's if they're... But if somebody has the gold, if I have my check, if I have the money, then I have the right to take care of myself first. And remember, who's saying this? This is Rabbi Akiva. What's Rabbi Akiva most famous for?
Generosity, probably.
What was his famous statement? On the famous verse.
For myself, who's
no, that
for
was Hillel. Okay.
Right.
Rabbi Akiva says, based on the verse, that you shall love thy neighbor as thyself, this is the golden rule of the Torah. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. Love thy neighbor as thyself. According to this, he would be required to love. I love me, and I love you. Therefore, we should split it. He says, no. I love you, right? But there's a certain level that I have to stop that love. If I have the pitcher, that means I save my life first. And then, and then I could save, once I've saved you, then I could save somebody else. Now this sounds horrible, but look at it in the view of charity, right? Look at it in the view of charity. I am required, what's mine is yours, is what's yours is yours, right? However, I'm supposed to take care of myself first. I give up to that point, or I make sure that I'm taken care of. Now, taken care of is a very relative term. It's taken care of in different communities, in different societies, etc., etc. However, I have to make sure that I can feed my family, and then that's when charity begins.
But I don't take care of myself, I'm not in a position to help anyone.
Exactly. So therefore, where is that limit? What's mine is yours, and what's yours is yours, and then I can be pious, feed my family. I don't have to drive, whatever.
Why wouldn't he take, for instance, 3/4 of it and let...
Because it does. Textbook case. 3/4 won't do it.
Or 90%.
90% won't do it. Remember, we're judging, well, maybe... No, this is textbook. This is, we're looking, we're opening up the law books.
You can drink it and run real fast and go get help.
Right. But it won't make it. So the textbook case is that they won't make it. So what we do is, he says... Rabbi Akiva says, even though I am, Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest righteous people in the history of mankind, according to our tradition. He still says, Rabbi Akiva, the stories of Rabbi Akiva on how pious he was and how benevolent he was, how philanthropic he was, they're all over the place. But, at the end of the day, he takes a verse and says, what God wants is, first you take care of yourself,
and then you
take care of everyone. So listen, if there is, where does charity begin?
At home.
At the home. If I have myself, my family, my immediate relatives, then my community, then the greater Jewish community, that's how it works. It's the same idea, Rabbi Akiva says. Right? Here it's an extreme because obviously life is at stake, but it's the same concept. My charity, my life, whatever I have, if it's mine, it takes precedence for me, for my family, for what we call Dalet Amot. Dalet Amot, which means 4 cubits. The concept of that this is 4 cubits is known as my area. This is my space, right? The first thing I have to do is I have to make sure an amma is actually about 1.5 feet.
What if it was? What if it was your instead of a friend? I haven't taken
a math class in a while.
What if it was
right from here to here?
What if it was you that had the water and you were with your son or your daughter? Then what would you do?
It's a very good question, because remember that we say that a person's da'ad amot, a person's 4 cubits, is himself as well. So you could say by extension that that would be the case, that a person's children would be theirs, right? But my neighbor, who I love, right? I'm hanging out in the desert with him. We're having a great time, right? At the end of the day, my 4 cubits take precedence over his 4 cubits.
Okay,
over his area. I'm sorry, what did I say?
I still don't understand.
Do you understand why? It's because in life, you take care of he who has the gold makes the rules, right? So, God really makes the rules. But God says, if you have the flask of water, if he has the flask of water, I can't take it from him. If I do, I'm murdering him.
Right.
That's it, right? If the flask of water is in the middle, well, then we have to figure out who owns it, and really nobody does. And so either they fight it out, according to some opinion, or they just both die, right? Because there's no one on. But if I have the flask of water, right? So it's the same thing as if I have the paycheck, right? My job first is to take care of my family, right? If I can give 10%, great. But I can't. It won't do it. So my job, in this case, an extreme. If I share with you now, I will die. Right? What is in a situation, let's say, I make just enough money to pay my rent and feed my family and pay my electric bill, right? And maybe a phone, right? And internet. No, right? So here I have, if I have just enough, then it's no longer my responsibility to take care of you.
Okay.
Right? When we say, and this is the crux of the class, there is a concept, we are the opposite extreme of Sodom. Okay? Now, so we all agree what's mine is your mine and what's yours is mine. That's not going to work. That is wicked. That is worse than selfish. That's a tyranny, right? And we agree to a certain extent, although there's room to disagree, that what's mine is yours and what was the second extreme? This is not easy to do.
No.
What is... back to the Babylonian thing. What is mine is yours and what's yours is mine. Is also not going to work. It's not, the system, the society doesn't work that way. So we finally say, okay, what we have here is we have these two left. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. That is Sodom. That is unacceptable. It breeds a society where there is such decadence and such a misunderstanding and misinterpretation of values. You have the people of Sodom, everything is so extreme, I cannot share with you. Anybody who shares is a crime. And as we said, based on that midrash, it leads to the next level of saying, I didn't murder you, right? The bees murdered you. I didn't murder you. You died of starvation. I didn't murder you. Exactly. I didn't murder you. You were screaming for help, and that's not my problem.
It absolves you from any responsibility.
It absolves from any responsibility whatsoever, and that creates a horrible, horrible value system in society.
Isn't that what he's doing when he's keeping the water off himself?
No. Because if I had two flasks of water, then I would be biblically required. Lo tamod al dam reyecha. Do not stand by the blood of your brother, it says. And I am biblically required to save you, and if I don't, it's an act of murder. If someone is screaming for help and I can save them, I am responsible. It's not just the good Samaritan. I am responsible to save their life.
So you have to take care of yourself. If it doesn't mean that... I just totally lost my whole
train
of thought.
You can't... At the end of the day, I am... If I can, and thank God most of us can... We are biblically responsible
so
to take care of people
in
whatever.
But
at the end of the day,
take care of yourself so you're in a position to help.
Right. At the end of the day, I have to make sure that I have enough. Now, enough is very, very subjective and very relative.
The angry bit.
Right.
Well, it depends on what size pitcher he has.
That's true.
It's
very relative. Enough is very relative. But at the end of the day, if I say I have enough,
right? Just enough to live.
I have enough to live, then I have. That's where my responsibility kicks in. And then I could say, what's mine is yours, and what's yours is yours. And then I could be pious. The Talmud, if I don't have it, I only have one pitcher of water. And if I give you the pitcher of water, I'm done.
Okay.
And therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, even the great pious Rabbi Akiva, who says, love thy neighbor as thyself, this is the greatest rule in the Torah, he says at the end of the day you have to make the very difficult move that he who has the pitcher has to win. There's no other alternative. And that is, according to Jewish law, then you're doing the right thing. But as soon as you have more than that, then you're required to give over. That's when it changes. And so we see that there is an important concept of going as far as you can. We didn't address the concept of Fnei Meshurat Hadin, going above the law. We mentioned the idea of tithing and giving 20% and giving however much you can in regards to charity, and seeing the gift that God gives you as only pretty much a loan that you have the right to use if you pay your 10%, if you tithe.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have a friend that's knowledgeable.
I'm sorry.
And this person said 15%. So where is she getting those 15% from?
Again, I think it's based on double the tax for tipping. aser to aser. The concept of tithing is 10%. Ma'aser is the term. That's where it comes from, the Torah. Aser to aser, you should surely give 10%.
But an aser is someone
That's in English.
Yeah.
That I don't know.
The one who values the gold.
Right. Now, that I don't know.
There's not a lot in English.
The
Hebrew.
Well, there's some. I have a friend who does it for fun. Right. This is just the concept of, in Hebrew it's called ma'aser, and it's tithing. If you go to a religious Catholics, they'll Christians, they know exactly where it is, and they tithe to the penny, and that's what they're supposed to do. That's a text does it for me as well, right? It's right there. Where do you think they got it from, right? So that comes from that is from. Deuteronomy, if I'm not mistaken, I can find the exact source. And but again, if I look at tithing as not I am giving of mine, it's I am giving of God's 10%, so He lets me allow to take 90%, and that's how we're supposed to look at it. And then we could say, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine, as long as I have enough to take care of my family. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.